Introduce yourself, please.
I'm State Representative Joe Runyons from the 37th District. I live in Grandview. Been there about 42 years. Retired electrician at this time.
We're going to find out more about all that. Okay. But first, let's hear the theme music.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. I'm Brian Ellison, quelling a small rebellion here in the production studio at KCUR 89.3, where we do not, in fact, have donuts for this week's edition of Statehouse Blend. I apologize to all of our guests. I apologize, Joe.
Thank you.
Everyone was waiting for them. But we are here with Tricia Bushnell, who is part of the Midwest Innocence Project and our citizen guest today. Tricia, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And also Dave Hudnall from The Pitch. Welcome to you, Dave.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. So we will talk about many things about the Missouri General Assembly today and about your path to political service, Joe Runyons. But first, we always ask people to tell us a little bit about their family, their kids, and their pets. You started to tell us about that.
I live in Grandview. I have a wife there. I've got a daughter that lives close by and two grandchildren. One is at a recent graduate, William Jewell. The other one is at Missouri State at this time, a junior.
Wow. All right. And any pets in there, too?
Oh, I have a little Shih Tzu. It's Cupcake.
Cupcake.
Yes.
Did you name the dog?
No. Joe? One of our grandnieces, we showed her the dog, and she said, well, that looks like a cupcake, and that's how she got her name.
All right. Okay, that's fine. So the other question we always ask is, how did you get hooked on politics? What led you to this?
Well, I retired as an electrician. I was visiting different people and friends of mine, and I was asked to run for the Grandview City Council in 2005. From there, I served 8 years until 2012 when Senator Holzman now asked me to run for the 37th District to replace him.
All right. Well, we will talk a lot today about, we'll talk a little about the veto override session that happened last month. We'll talk some about issues coming up before the General Assembly next year as well. But let's first go around the table and ask our guests what's on their mind. How about you, Tricia? What are you thinking about? Tricia Bushnell.
Right now, I'm thinking a lot about the minimum wage in Kansas City and the issues of what that means for us as Missourians.
Of course, I was a no vote on the override. I understand that, probably my background. You know, I came from...
You're a union man.
I'm a union man, and also I grew up in the Westport area. We didn't know we were all poor because we were all in the same boat. So, and I do understand those things.
Just to review for our listeners, the override vote, the legislature passed a bill that prohibited cities like Kansas City from adopting their own minimum wage rates. The governor vetoed it, but the full General Assembly overrode the governor's veto.
Yes, and it started out, I was on the committee where it started out, it was just to ban the plastic bags in Columbia, and then Kansas City and St. Louis started talking about a minimum wage increase, and they tacked that on. I think it's going to be a lawsuit. I'm not positive of that, but they are different sections of the state law. So there's a very good possibility that could overturn in the courts, which would be good for us.
Well, I'm kind of curious. You were a Grandview City Councilman before. What would you have thought about that if you were on the council then, or, you know, if Grandview had passed a similar ordinance?
That was something that was constantly discussed when I was in the city, is that we get these unfunded mandates coming down from Jeff City constantly. There's all kinds of things. There was some court issues that were going to cost the city thousands of dollars. And, you know, they just told us to do it. But along that line, we hear the same thing in Jeff City on a daily basis, that the federal government is stepping all over the state's rights. 15 minutes later, we are trampling on our local governments. And that's not just cities. That's the school boards, the fire districts, and everything.
And does there seem to be any awareness of the hypocrisy of that in Jeff City?
Simple terms, they don't care.
Yeah,
they don't care why. I mean, they must care about something. What do they care about instead?
Then it gets back to the the ethics, the finances. It's all about money down there.
I have to say, I'm going to let David ask his question here in a minute too. But you sound a little fed up. Am I misreading you, Joe? You sound a little put off by what goes on in Jefferson City.
Yes, I think we're sent down there, and especially coming out of the city government, where you know your constituents are right next door to you on a daily basis. You have to answer to them. They call you. They know where you live, and too many representatives in Jeff City don't take care of their constituents. It drives me crazy that they will vote against their constituents on a daily basis. They don't, you know, Medicaid expansion. There's just so many numerous things that they don't do. And I guess the reason and people ask me, why do you keep doing it? Well, I get to help a lot of my constituents on little everyday things that they will call the state and spend hours on the phone and not get a thing done. We're able to make two or three phone calls and get these resolved. So that's what I'm down there for. And I think all representatives should be down there for only reason. That's take care of their citizens.
Dave Hudnall of The Pitch, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I guess that kind of gets at another thing, which is the ethics thing, which is always there in Missouri. There is essentially no movement on it in the last section. I'm just trying to figure out what is like kind of the – why is that not happening? Like what is the holdup on that?
We're talking here about limits on campaign gifts and other related issues.
Because it would seem like something everybody in theory should be like, yeah, I'm for that. We don't want any more corruption. At least it's a seem like it.
It sounds good, but when they dangle that, I think some of the attorney generals on the Republican side, one got a $500,000 contribution. The other one got approximately $500,000 from two or three different individuals. They can't turn that money down.
But what's wrong with that? I mean, as long as they report it. I mean, Joe Don McGaw was in here a couple weeks ago, and we asked him that question. He said he has no problem with unlimited campaign contributions as long as it's reported and everybody can see what a person's getting. If they don't like it, they can vote out their representative. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, but the local guy down the street can't come up with those kind of dollars for his issues, like the minimum wage increase. Those folks don't have those kind of dollars that they can throw around. Right? They would have to throw millions of dollars to get maybe a 50% vote out.
So what does the local guy down the street, what should he be doing? So if we have this problem where folks are getting elected because of this money that the local guy can't come up with, what's the solution that these folks can then be heard? What should we be looking at?
Try to be aware of what's going on. But too many people vote single-issue items, abortion, pro-life. There's all kinds of things there. They all vote on these single issues. And that's not what, like I said earlier, that's not what we're down there for. We're not down there to vote on guns and whether abortion's right or wrong. We should be looking after our citizens that need a better living wage. They need health care. Those are all the real issues. We need more, better roads.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those issues. When you say the real issues, what would you say are your most important priorities as a state representative?
We need to expand Medicaid. It's a simple solution. It helps. It isn't going to cure everything. We need better roads. I mean, like a gas tax, 17 cents a gallon.
I mean, you think we could have a higher gas tax in this state? Is what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, we're not even close to anybody, and our roads are deteriorating, and people don't realize that they're going to take care of the 8,000 miles of the primary roads, and they think, oh well, I'm fine, but if you live in the Belton area, Raymore area, that means 58 highway, the interchange in there needs fixed. But it's not going to happen because that's not a primary intersection with 49 is, but not that. They're everywhere. There's bridges, and the Broadway Bridge is in terrible shape, and it won't be on the list to fix.
So what do you do about that? You you would support raising taxes, which I can't imagine is a terribly politically popular position in a lot of districts, maybe not even yours. How's that going to get done?
It has to be tax raising, whether it's we didn't pass the three-quarter sales tax last year. And come out of city, the cities have to raise, the school districts raise taxes all the time. But they show what they're using it for. If they say you're going to build a school or we're going to improve this road or that road in the city or we're going to build a rec center, then they ask the constituents for the money and then they follow up and they do what they're asked.
I haven't heard you blame the Republicans specifically, although they are in control of both houses of the legislature. Is this a partisan problem or is this a problem that affects both parties, this unwillingness to, as you say, address the real issues?
I don't think any of the Democrats signed that no tax increase pledge. I got one. I threw it away. But and that's not being government, not being able – thinking you can't raise taxes. It's right now it's a Republican. I think some of the moderate Republicans are willing to do that. But we have, you know, both sides have the far right and the far left. And we need to all get back to where the middle is, where moderates run the state. And I think we can be more progressive and balance the legislature. I mean, if we were 120 or 115, we would have a much balanced legislature.
All right. So I guess I'm curious, Tricia Bushnell. You're here as a citizen, but you're not just a citizen. You're the legal director of the Midwest Innocence Project, which I know you're not representing them here today, but you're speaking for yourself. You're pretty connected, though, to at least some of the workings of state government. Are you surprised or discouraged when you hear one of our state representatives seem pretty discouraged about the potential for positive progress?
I certainly don't think I'm surprised. I think particularly in this line of work, what we do representing folks who are innocent of crimes that they didn't commit, we're used to losing. We're used to people being put in really bad situations. I think the questions that I have, though, always for all of our representatives is, well, how are we going to fix this? Because I know that feeling, especially working in criminal justice, of the problem is so big, it's so huge, I just don't want to deal with it. But we have to deal with it. And that's what we do every day as lawyers, is we're pushing. So that's why when I'm asking you, you know, what should the everyday Joe be doing? What should you be doing? I'm also curious, you were talking about representatives. I think you were saying the representatives are one, you know, all into the one issue, are these big hot button issues. I'm curious if you think that constituents are much different, because I don't know that constituents are out there talking about roads, are talking about things, right? I think right now we do hear about abortion and Planned Parenthood in the news. We do hear about the death penalty. I'll put that on the table as a discussion for today. These sorts of things in the news, which are very divisive, but we don't hear about infrastructure. So I'm curious whether you think constituents are looking at that, and if not, what we can do to make them think about that.
As far as the infrastructure, I don't think constituents worry about it until it happens to their street, you know, and right in their community. I know that we have a road there in my area, Blue Ridge. I had a lot of complaints. I spoke to the city about it, and I got some results. I didn't get what we really wanted, but people are starting to step up and listen to what those things are starting to happen. And they, you know, and then they just see the disparity where it really gets done over here, but this side of this, you know, the community doesn't get it. So there are, but it's not in the news as much as it should be either.
So is that how we get people to pay attention? Is it the news? Is that, 'cause you're saying, you know, people are starting to pay attention. And I'm curious, like, what are the mechanisms that we get people involved? Because I think until we look at that, we are going to be in a fit of despair, right? So how do we – what is that? And from your perspective, because you have this experience that the rest of us don't have, like what are we missing? What should we be doing?
I think people are going to have to go out, the people that are interested in these things, and start knocking on doors, because, you know, you pick up the newspaper or you look at it online or you – or you watch the news on TV, you just get sound bites, and then you get a lot of fluff, and you get a lot of advertisements. You don't get the in-depth news that we used to get. I mean, you used to be able to read the whole story and know what was going on. Now you just don't get it from the news. You get what they want you to hear, and there's just so many other things going on. You hear a lot of things about different things, but you don't hear about the gentleman down the street that's, you know, disabled and his street's all tore up and he can't get out. Those things don't come out on the news. That's what we need to get the information to. It's not helping. It's hard to explain. It just frustrates the hell out of me that people don't. They're worried about these, and when they go to vote, they look at those main issues, and that's how they vote.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm just sort of, not to go over this too much, but I am sort of interested in what it's like to be a Democrat right now in the Missouri legislature. Like, it seems like there's, the last city council election in Kansas City, there's two people from the legislature, Jolie Justice and Kevin McManus, who essentially decided, well, maybe a civic role is a better way to get things done. Or maybe that's a, you know.
They're also term limited out.
But, right. But know. I mean, you know, so, and that has more to do with their political aspirations or whatever. But it does seem like maybe the state is just in such a place of gridlock. And I don't know. I'm just curious what you think. You know, how effective a Democrat can be in the state legislature at this point, or how hopeless it is.
not real effective.
Yeah.
I think we just need to keep hitting away, trying to cross the aisle. And we do cross the aisle on items, and especially, let's just, the Kansas City area. If it's a Kansas City issue, the whole Kansas City delegation stands together. Very seldom do we not stand on a Kansas City item.
Wasn't always the case either.
No, and it doesn't happen as much on the St. Louis side. I mean, yeah, that's a whole different story. But
do you feel like, I mean, let me build on Dave's question. Do you feel like Democratic legislative leaders are offering a vision that can gain bipartisan support? Are they putting forward an alternate vision that if the state's voters wanted to say, we're going to take the legislature out of a Republican supermajority's hands, is it clear to voters what they'd be getting instead, do you think?
It would be the way the redistricting was drawn, it very, very hard. I think the best, from what I understand, if the Democrats could win every contested seat that's close, we would still be in the low 70s, number-wise, which would be a lot better. But, I mean, you're talking about 55% Republican districts if we could turn those. But that's hard. The way it's redistricted, that's why if we reduce the size of the legislature, then they redistrict and it would balance things up. Probably would be close to a 50-50 legislature, which is the most progressive.
Mm-hmm. And is it your sense you are not predicting by any means that that's going to happen? But in a day when that could happen, do you feel like the state would actually move a different direction? Are the problems that you're talking about, this unwillingness to address the real issues, limited to the Republicans who are in power now, or do you see it on the Democratic side too?
And I heard, you know, the Democrats controlled it, and I think there was some of that in the past when the Democrats controlled it. But I don't think it's as bad as it is now, because at that time people, you know, it was a different climate. Taxes weren't a sin. You know, taxes were progress. And I think there was an article in the Star the other day that Johnson Countyans ought to be thanking the citizens of Jackson County for voting for the stadium improvements. So it's just in the last 15 years that things have went south about taxes.
Joe, would you be offended if I asked how old you are?
No.
Okay. How old are you?
I'm the oldest state legislator down there.
You are.
I will be 75 in 2 weeks.
All right. So congratulations on being the oldest state legislator out there. I read in your bio that you were an electrician for 42 years.
Yes.
You retired. I guess it strikes me that you could be spending your retirement a lot of different ways. You don't sound like you're enjoying yourself very much in Jefferson City. Why are you doing this?
It comes back to what I said a while ago. I'm able to help my constituents, the people, my neighbors, my, you know, friends. That's what you do this for. You don't do it for the money, or you don't do it for, but you know, you've got to help your neighbors.
You look like you're trying to say something,
well,
Tricia.
I'm thinking. So you were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, those folks who are knocking on doors and trying to build a movement behind the things that they care about. And I was also thinking a little bit because you were talking about the Kansas City block versus the St. Louis block. And, you know, it strikes me that some could argue that the Black Lives Matter movement is that knocking on doors and asking people to look at this issue. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts on that or if there's been any discussion in the legislature about Black Lives Matter or what those implications are.
Nothing happened in Jeff City on the Ferguson. It was never really discussed. It was discussed in some of the committees, and I'm part of the Labor Caucus, and we had a lot of discussions about that. There is a lot of differences between, especially in the building trades, between Kansas City and St. Louis. We're different. We're totally different. They don't get along down there in St. Louis County. It's nothing. I mean, it's hard to describe, but if we didn't have St. Louis County, and I'm not saying St. Louis City is a lot better shape than St. Louis County. If we didn't have St. Louis County, we wouldn't have much to discuss in Jeff City. But no, I think our side of the state, and I'm talking about our legislators, we're aware of that. We try to work with the Black Caucus, but, you know, I don't know. It's not getting any movement from St. Louis.
Interesting. You mentioned being part of the Labor Caucus. Another issue that really dominated this past session was the right-to-work legislation. You voted to sustain the governor's veto, along with most Democrats and many Republicans as well. We've heard from others. Speaker Pro Tem Denny Hoskins was on the podcast a week or two ago and said that will be back in the 2016 session. Do you see any different outcome, any change in the way that debate happens? Will we have right-to-work legislation in Missouri?
Not as long as we have a Democratic governor.
As long as it's there to be vetoed.
And I think that the Republican legislators that stood with us will continue to stand with us. They have a lot of union members that are in their districts. And what you hear is that we're going to grow jobs, but the only reason unions are around is for wages and benefits. That's how we grew. That's what maintains us. It's a different culture today. I come from the building trades, and we train all our journeyman environment. We send them through rigorous 4 and 5 year apprenticeship programs, which is paid for by the union members as part of their negotiated package. We have good benefits, good retirement, and those are the things that you don't get. That's the big issue. You don't get good benefits in right to work states.
Let's go around the table one last time. Dave Hudnall, what else are you thinking about for Joe Runyon?
Well, are you on the Energy and Environment Committee? Is that right?
Yes.
What did you think? I saw yesterday, there's a release yesterday from Chris Koster's office that they're going to fight the EPA Clean Power Act. I'm wondering what you
think. I agree with that. Yeah. I think we do. We've got too many coal plants, and the two major utilities are working to improve on those, but it takes time. And if we lose all the coal, we're going to lose a lot of jobs.
So you just sort of think coal is too important to Missouri jobs? Is that kind of the...
Right now, the coal, even though the coal comes from Wyoming, we need more time. We really need more time to do this. And as far as the building trades, you know, we make money if they improve them, or if we make money if they build them. But still, you know, it's a job issue.
Is it hard as part of a relatively small Democratic caucus to find yourself opposing something that is pro-environment, like an EPA order?
No. And that's something about our Democratic caucus. We're never told how to vote. I mean, you hear a lot of different things. Well, we're surprised you voted this way. No, we're never told how to vote. Mm. We vote our district or our conscience.
How much diversity of thought is there in this relatively small Democratic caucus in the General Assembly?
Quite a bit.
I mean, I know, for example, on abortion rights, there's a number of pro-life or anti-abortion Democrats.
Yes. And I vote pro-life most of the time. Not all the time, but that's what I say. You don't vote single issues.
And that doesn't put you in a rough spot with your fellow Democrats?
No. I mean, I have two very liberal Democrats on each side of my office. On my office, on each side, and we get along fine.
All right. And one more question from you, Tricia Bushnell.
My last question is actually about some of the death penalty secrecy laws that we have here in Missouri that keep secret what the drugs are that are being used. And we now know that most of the drugs that have been used are no longer being distributed by the European companies that make them. And there's been a lot of lawsuits in Missouri about getting access to knowing what drugs Missouri is using. I bring it up because, you know, we talked a little bit about abortion rights and folks being pro-life, and I'm curious if there's any discussion at all or if there could be any movement in the legislature at looking at changing those secrecy laws or looking at the cost of the death penalty in the discussion of being pro-life.
No, not at all. There is none of the discussion at all. That's all. That plus the real pro-life issue is completely different. You know, to me, pro-life, birth to death. Some people think pro-life only lasts till the baby's born. And then they're on their own. So I don't fall into that. That's why I want Medicaid expansion. That's why I want some of these other things that we need to take care of. We need to take care of them any time in their life, not just a certain period. So I haven't heard any discussion about the death penalty down there.
Not on the table at the moment. Well, I want to thank you, Joe Runyons, for being here. Thanks to our guests, Tricia Bushnell. Thank you for being here, Tricia.
Thank you.
And you, Dave Hudnall of The Pitch. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian.
Joe, there's one more question we always ask all of our guests. We always end the show by inviting you to tell us your favorite song or a song that stands out to you as a good way for us to end our show. What's your favorite song, Joe?
I'd say Going to Kansas City.
Going to Kansas City.
Yeah.
The Beatles rendition?
No.
No.
The real one.
The real one. Okay, there's an assignment for our producer, Matt Hodapp. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. Thanks for being here today.
All right, thank you.
State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp, who will be tracking down music right now. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, that is a great way to follow us and to follow the news from Jeff City and also from Topeka. I'm at PTS Brian. You can follow my co-host, Sam Zeff, at Sam Zeff. We always use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. You can find a shorter version of our show every Tuesday morning as part of Up to Date. They make a little space for us. That's at 11 a.m. And if you'd like to be the citizen guest, sit where Tricia is now sitting. Or if you have any other thoughts about the show, shoot me an email. I'm at Brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll see you next time.